Bridge Bunny and Inca has just given us the go to launch for this episode of Speaker Podcast, coming to you and recorded live from Southern California with participants from the northern area of California. So, I am your sometimes co-host, Adrian, also known as Save or Save Robotech on those other websites. And to my right is
Jason C. or Jasny. Take your pick. And to my right,
Richard, a.k.a. Goobaba.
And next to me,
I have my first time on the Speaker Podcast.
We're popping your podcast cherry.
You are popping my podcast cherry. My name is Doug. I was known years ago as Darkwater, the Robotech blogger. But now I am a guest on this wonderful podcast, and I'm happy to be here.
You've never actually listened to it, have you?
I've listened to a couple episodes. And on my right is
Cheryl, otherwise known as Cher or Reflex Point on the old Robotech.com site.
We've got a lot of people with Robotech stuff in their names, don't we?
And who do we have over in San Francisco? Well, where are you guys at? Bay Area?
Closer to San Jose, probably. We are in the Bay Area.
We're in the peninsula.
The peninsula. Thank you.
All right. So who are you guys?
I'm Kyle, also known as Falcon KPD on the boards. And to my left is...
Actually, it's your right.
What?
No, just kidding.
You're to my left.
I'm Annika, also known as Neoka on the Macross World Forums.
Wow. Well, you guys are lucky because next week is like the anime event in Santa Clara and you can go get Tommy Yoon's autograph.
We're really excited.
Yeah, it's going to be
anime
awesome.
On display, which I doubt they'll have any Robotech animation to display. And the one thing to note here is Doug, the former Robotech podcaster and blogger, is wearing the officially licensed original SDF Macross t-shirt released by Bait. So in my neck of the woods, Tokyo, that would not be considered officially licensed, but we are in the United States.
You know what? I was in New York like back in September wearing this shirt. And I passed by an elderly, like, Japanese couple, and the man, like, stopped on the street. Like, they were tourists in New York City. He looked at my shirt, and his face lit up.
Aww.
He just kept walking by, and I was like, that's cool, because he, you know, here he is, like, seeing this Japanese text somewhere, you know, from, you know, I don't know, he wasn't elderly. Maybe he's, like, you know, middle-aged, so. But something that he knew, and he was kind of excited to see in this foreign world that he was traveling the streets of.
And you were wearing a Orozco Doji shirt at the time, right?
I was wearing the Macross Bait shirt at the time. I was wearing the he saw the Macross. He went, "Oh my god!" Yeah, I don't know. I had the Orozco Doji hat. That's, you know,
oh, okay.
Yeah, with the tentacles coming out. So,
why do we keep bringing up Robotech tonight?
Well,
we're going to be discussing the Robotech live action movie. We've got a treatment right here.
Oh yes, there is a treatment. Well, actually, something has surfaced in the last 2 weeks, and. Well, with all this live-action news coming out about, you know, how the director James Wan's going to be moving on to Aquaman now that the Covenant, or what was it called?
Conjuring.
Conjuring's done. And
the
all
Covenant's
this,
done.
It's been wrapped. Well, something has surfaced that is not really Robotech-related, but a film-related thing related to Macross.
And an American film.
American film, Macross, yes.
Yeah. And what's interesting is probably about 6 months ago, I had noticed, because I'm always searching for Macross 2 stuff, which is no surprise to most of you. And I've been looking for this Macross U.S. renditions Ishtar shirt forever, and two of them went on eBay, mint, buy now. I bought them for like $50 a piece. Do not regret one thing about it. But the seller, he was saying that he was actually the nephew of Kevin Seymour, who's also known as Quint Lancaster, a.k.a. Dougherty Grant, who was actually...
And Roden Arrows.
Roden Arrows.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was basically one of the ADR directors who had worked on pretty much every 90s up until probably the last 10 years, anime dub.
He was also the voice for Mosh.
He was the voice for Mosh?
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Rather abrupt. Thank you, guys. He's the one who passed away, right?
Kevin Seymour is the one who passed away.
Yes, he was the voice of Mosh.
Really?
Because the actor for Hibiki said, like, he told me not to tell anyone or else he'd kill me.
Oh.
But he's passed on now, so I guess I can say it now.
So, yes, we have lost the Orson Welles of the anime voice community. And not all joking aside, he had passed away a few years ago. And his nephew was given the task of kind of liquidating or selling off his assets. Mm-hmm. So he started putting them on eBay. And the seller doesn't really know what he has. He knows a little bit about anime. He knows the popular stuff. So when the Macross 2 stuff went up, I bought it right away. I contacted him. I looked at his other auctions. I said, if you get anything else Macross 2 related, please let me know. I'll buy it off you right away. I'll give you a good price. Then come a week and a half ago, he put something up and didn't tell me. And one of... who put it up?
Benson.
Benson.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Benson put up the link that, hey, did anybody see this? I jumped on it, found out it was the same seller, and it turned out to be... I'll let you go in the description of what it is, because you ended up buying it.
So, yeah. Darkwater Doug here. The first version went sold right away, and he made some copies, and I bought the first copy of it. And it was literally just this folder full of, like, you know, maybe about 200 pages of just documents that Kevin Seymour was using while working on Macross 2. Most of it was song translations. Like, there's certain songs they just translated over and over and over again, so I got this huge... you know, just stack of just them trying to translate
because,
the songs.
Yeah, because the point with the lyrics for the songs was that they wanted lyrics that you could sing along to.
Yeah, maybe they were trying to be ambitious and actually thinking they were going to record in English.
No, they just wanted subtitles.
Got
so
it.
That you could sing along.
Okay, so that would explain why, yeah, there were so many notes on the songs. There were notes from people like David Riddick, who worked on there, saying, you know, what they expected out of there, but... the biggest thing that was there was the treatment that Kawamari wrote for a live-action Macross movie intended for U.S. audiences, and it was dated 1992.
Okay, let me stop you really quick. Before we get into the big story here, if you want to know a little bit more about David Keith Riddick and Kevin Seymour and Les
Claypool
III, the Speaker Podcast, episode 33, we put up the audio for the U.S. Renditions panel for Macross WorldCon 2015. That's like a good 45 minutes.
And it's totally worth it. It's really great.
They do talk about Kevin Seymour. A lot of the voice actors are there. They do talk a lot about... they talk about Macross 2, Orgus, Guyver, all kinds of stuff that they've worked on. So please check out that episode if you want to, as Renato says, contextualize this. And so please check that episode out, and go ahead, Doug.
So it was this 13-page treatment. I had no idea what it was about. I had heard about Kawamari, you know, dabbling in doing a live-action movie in the U.S. based on Macross, but it was the first time I'd actually ever had solid evidence of something there. I mean, I know there was a special, the Macross 7 special.
Yeah.
Showed a script page.
They showed a part of the script, and they showed some of the designs, which I think we all thought were Zentradi Mecha.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't.
No, they were not. Get into that. It was, so, you know, I started reading it, and just as kind of, I don't know if it's a disclaimer or you say, the English was written either as a straight translation, or it seemed like it was written by, you know, somebody whose first language was not English. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure it was translated.
Okay,
definitely. Whoever happened to be around who spoke a little bit of English.
Yeah, we've all passed along. Oh, Doug has made the purchase, but passed along a copy to everybody here. And I mean, Richard, you've done fan stuff. Fan sub stuff. We've worked on fan official subs, And it does say that it is a treatment by Shoji Kawamori, not Kawamari. And
go easy, I'm a Robotech guy.
He's a Robotech guy. And so, yeah, you can pretty much assume it was written by Kawamori. And if you look at U.S. renditions translation from that time, you got to remember, you know, in Dangayo, it wasn't psychic beam, it was sidekick beam.
Right.
So probably the same people that did the translations did this one, and this one was probably a really rough one and a first pass. And
I think it makes perfect sense. Yeah. There are a lot of grammatical mistakes in it, but I think it's pretty clear.
It is pretty clear. At some points, there's no paragraph breaks, which gets a little tough to read too.
Right.
Just because what we're used to seeing right now. But overall, it makes sense. There might be one or two parts where I go, I don't know what I just read, but that was only maybe like a couple sentences.
So let me ask you a couple questions. How many pages is this treatment?
13.
13
pages, yeah. It starts with couple pages of the outline of just the basic overall themes, the characters, and the changes that he's making from Do You Remember Love? And then maybe about 10 or 11 pages of just straight story.
Now, would you say this is a one-part movie? Do you think it's a trilogy? Is it a two-parter?
I would say it's a movie that could definitely stand on its own, much like Do You Remember Love? But it could definitely continue on. It's very open-ended.
What about you, Richard? Do you think it's a one-parter, two-parter?
It seems like a one-parter to me. I mean, it kind of it ends the story. People versus Zentradi, and the Zentradi are defeated. Mm. Of course, I mean, it was supposed to come out in 1996, so, 7+, and 2 were already done by the time this was supposed to come out.
Any thoughts, Jason?
I think looking at the type of movies that were coming out at the time that were kind of similar on this sort of scale, they were usually one-offs anyways, so I'm pretty sure that this would have just been a one-off movie and probably left it open enough at the end where if it, by some miracle or some chance, it did really well, they could have added on a second movie to it.
I think a good comparison, I'll just interject real quick, would be Independence Day. Was definitely a one-off movie, but it left the door open. I mean, none of us knew that door would open 25 years later, but 20 years later.
And Kyle, did you get a chance to read it?
I did, yes.
Yeah, what do you think? You weren't born yet, but...
Well, this script was written in 92, you said?
Yeah.
I wasn't born yet. my thoughts are pretty much what you guys have said. Probably would have been good on its own.
I didn't say that.
Well, okay, no. What I mean is it would have been a complete package on its own.
Yeah, okay.
Whether or not it would be good or not, we'll get into that. But I think it could have stood on its own just fine. Maybe make a sequel a few years down the road. Who knows? Maybe if it did as well as Independence Day did. I doubt it. We'd be seeing a sequel to it now. So who knows?
Well, we knew that. Well, when they were working on the actual early production stuff with producers, and there was pictures of Kawamori surfacing in 94, they did have a title. Well, Big West on their official website actually called it Outpost Earth.
Final Outpost
Earth. But is there a title on this treatment?
The title of this is Macross Live Action Movie Treatment. That's all there is. So this was obviously not intended to... Obviously was not intended to be public. But it was also not at the stages where it was ready to be pitched out, probably to agents or producers.
Yeah. Now, probably between 92 and 94, would you believe that between this treatment and the one that was actually seen by producers and got Kawamori into meetings, do you think it would have changed drastically?
Oh, completely. I mean, 2 years, you're not just going to sit on something like this for 2 years. This was, it probably went over constant revisions over the 2 years. And, we saw in 90, by, I think it was 94, was it David Newman, the screenwriter of the Superman movies and Bonnie and Clyde, to name a few, had given it the title, had changed at least one of the characters' names, or at least two of the characters' names. So this was probably a first pass. you know, why Kevin Seymour may have had this. Maybe he was helping with the translation. You never know. I mean, maybe he was helping spruce it up a little bit. But this was just, you know, this was obviously a very preliminary, not ready for prime time, you know, story to be consumed yet.
All right. Well, tell us who we got, what we have. And so what is Minmay, Hikaru, and Misa?
Well, I think the first thing is, and this is the first thing that raised my eyebrows, was the differences of the backstory. So, you know, I don't think we need to recap the Macross backstory, but
well,
yeah.
Which backstory? The SDF Macross TV series, or Do You Remember Love?
Both. Well, Do You Remember Love didn't really have. I mean, Do You Remember Love skipped a lot of the backstory.
Yeah,
and he even explains that the reason why is because it came out 9 months after the show, you know, wrapped up. So he didn't really have to explain it to the audiences again. But as far as the Macross, you know, landing on Earth, them reconstructing it, having these giant robots ready to go just in case these giant aliens come. This one is a little bit different. And when I started reading this, it didn't click in my head right away where these changes had gone later on in the Macross saga. But so to start off, Macross is one of 10 colony ships being used by the planet Earth, UN Spacey, to colonize another planet. They're basically, you know, they basically put a whole ecosystem inside of a ship. I think that at one point they said it was like 3 or 4 times the size of the Macross that we know from the series.
Yeah.
I think the original size was 1,200 meters.
1,200,
yeah. And they bump it up to about 4,000 meters.
Yeah.
Oh, you role-playing nerds are really going to hate us.
But, you know, rather than a ship that was stranded in space, this was a ship intended to go in space. So they put like an Amazon jungle. They put a coral reef in there. They're using it to kind of like a I want to say like biodome. You know, the Pauly Shore masterpiece. They're using it as kind of like a from the same time. That was like, but it was it was basically like this biodome. It was supposed to be a, you know, a an ecosystem that could sustain itself for a long, long time. And so basically, yeah, that's the origin of the Macross. It's just one of 10 ships. And then the origin of the Valkyries is not, like I said, because the ship crashed and they realized that there might be giant aliens coming from them. It's ships before the Macross had reported these huge giant aliens. So when Macross got shot out from Earth, they decided to build Valkyries for the Macross just in case they encounter these giant aliens. So that's the difference in the backstory.
So Gon is, if we're talking about Do You Remember Love, the bombardment of Earth. Like,
yeah.
Earth is not...
That's true, yeah. That's gone.
Destroyed.
Yep.
Where they, you know, they go and come back and they find out they return to Earth and it's gone. Or if it's SDF Macross, Gon is the ship crash lands from outer space, they rebuild it, all that's...
Mm-hmm.
It's just a human-made ship.
Yep. And the Zentradi are totally different. They have a different background. They actually have no background. We really don't know the protoculture's not there. Meltrons and the Zentrons are not there. The Marduk aren't there, but
well, you know what is there? Is a 12-page Marduk dictionary that was included.
Oh, that's
in
right. Yeah. Yes,
and
that's
that
right.
Is a podcast in and of itself.
Yes, yes. that was also in the Macross 2 files. I think it was 6 or 12 page Marduk dictionary. Marduk to English.
Next
so
podcast, all in Marduk.
Yes. Yeah, I won't be appearing on that one.
Yes,
no,
you will
do that one yourself.
You'll be writing like a 12-page blog post about it.
Yeah.
In Marduk.
I don't know. It's okay.
So before we go, is that enough to...
Well, and you know, I think I should just point out that calamari kept putting in here...
Mori.
Calamari.
I'd like some fried calamari.
It's a trap, trust me. So Carver, he put in there that, you know, we have to be this has to be simplified because, like he said, you know, the Japanese audiences, when Do You Remember Love came out, had that backstory of the TV series. So they already kind of had that. Here he explains that he wants it to be simplified because you don't have enough time to go into all that backstory. So simplify the Zentradi, simplify the Macross, simplify, you know, all this backstory. And, you know, just, you know, get audiences right into the story.
Richard.
Yeah.
What did you think about Kawamori's take on writing a treatment for the U.S. audience? Because it specifically states, you know, this is a Hollywood movie.
Right.
For Hollywood American viewers and how they would look at the story. So going up to what he's read up so far, do you think he had a, what he's thinking is sound, or is it
I don't know, because I'm not sure what he's doing differently, because, I mean, should I let the cat out of the bag here? It's basically Frontier.
Yeah.
This is Macross Frontier done as a movie. There are scenes in this treatment that were used directly for Frontier.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's... I mean, Renato talked before on a previous Speaker Podcast episode. I'm not sure which one it is, but when Kawamori came out with his book, and he talked about writing the movie and how he was trying to find, like, the visual grammar of Hollywood as opposed to Japanese movies. And I think he used the example of, you know, in something like Kamen Rider, something you always have the henshin scene where he poses and transforms. And Kawamori was talking about RoboCop and how RoboCop doesn't really become RoboCop until he gets the keys to the car.
Mm.
And that's, like, the Hollywood henshin transformation scene. Mm. But I don't, I mean, just in this treatment, I don't really see anything like that.
So when you read it, Jason, as you're reading it, were you visualizing Frontier?
You know, I when I was first going through it, I tried to read it as Macross, and I was kind of torn between SDF Macross and Do You Remember Love when I first started reading. But then when they start going into the description of the ship, you know, how it's this huge ship, how it has its own ecosystem. Then all of a sudden I start thinking, okay, you know, first couple episodes of Frontier, you know, the first pilot who dies, I can't remember his name.
Killian.
Yeah. When he dies, they basically, when they buried him, they basically drop his body into this water, and they even talk about him becoming part of the system where they can all breathe, where they can all live, where the plants can, you know, that sort of thing. So it, there's definite direct connections to Frontier.
Yeah. It also says how the Macross is a modular ship where all these, the Amazon and everything is connected to it. So I'm totally visualizing Frontier. Not even Frontier. I hate to say this.
Biodome.
Seven did it first. kind of thing. Like, everything's connected. What about you, Kyle?
Yeah, I was totally getting some Seven vibes at first, and then
Valkyrie,
especially the end.
Right.
Well, I was gonna say, can I go ahead and talk about the Valkyries a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. Towards the end, I definitely got some scrambled Valkyrie vibes because of, like, the whole sound relay kind of thing where they were relaying the music that was being sung with. Okay, the main character's name is Ace in this.
Ace Isikaru.
Yes, Ace Isikaru. Should have probably mentioned that beforehand.
It's worth pointing out that Kawamori was not tied to these names because he says, actually, I'm not really aware of, like, customs and positions and racial relationships in the United States. So, you know, here are some names. If you want to change them, change them.
So I would have called him Rick Yamada.
Right. Richie Pirelli. Richie Pirelli is what he ended up in the script. But yeah, so we've got Ace, who's Hikaru. We've got Maria, who's Minmay. We've got Ellen, who's Misa. We've got Captain Sheridan, who's the captain of the ship. But she doesn't do much. There's Mayor Rogers. Who's the mayor?
But he's also like the Kyle.
Yeah. There's Roy Fokker, who is listed among the characters, but doesn't do anything in the plot. Max Genius. And Kamijin, the lieutenant of the Zentradi forces, who is the only Zentradi character in the whole thing.
So was it you wanted to finish up on the Valkyrie?
I was just saying the whole idea of the kind of sound relay, like the Minmay canon idea from Scrambled Valkyrie was present. It seemed like Kawamori was really obsessed with that idea until Seven came out, when he finally got to you know, put it into action. So that's just interesting to note.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I will throw in there about Kalmori is I think most people have this idea, even I've had it at times, where Kalmori left Macross around that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, well, he went off. He didn't want to do any more Macross. That's why Big West went with, you know, AIC and Indigo Studio Niue. Well, it looks like they were working on both of these at the same time.
Yeah. This is November 92, so yeah. Macross 2 Volume 6, I think, would have been coming out.
So this pretty much shows that Kawamori was still actively pursuing something new with Macross. And looks like he was trying to go a live-action Hollywood route. So that, I think that's one of the most interesting things, because most people have always said when it comes to 2, well, Kawamori left it. Yeah, he left the animation part of it. You know, he wasn't interested in continuing animation series or OVA, but he didn't leave Macross. So I don't think it can be said now that he's never took his hands off the button.
And that's an important fact to remember, because there's a lot of people that go on with that, and they will argue it to their grave. But
yeah.
he was active, I mean, really seriously trying to get this done.
Macross 2 Volume 6 came out November 21st, 1992. This treatment is dated November 10th.
Mm-hmm. So, and this is also right after he did Advanced Valkyrie 2, right?
Right.
Should we quickly just, I mean, we've already touched on bits and pieces of the plot.
Yeah.
Should we talk anything about, you know, just kind of give everybody else kind of what the plot, because it is missing some things from Do You Remember Love? I don't know, like, I don't know how important the differences are.
Well, the story, since we're the only people who have read it.
I guess we should probably kind of relay the story real quick.
Yeah.
It starts out, and he says, like, right off the bat, I'm going to use the Macross names because so people don't get confused, but Hikaru was already dating Misa at the very beginning. And also Kalamari.
That's right.
Kalamari. Kalamari. Why do I keep doing it? Kalamari. He actually put in the treatment early on, too, that, you know, this is not a sexist, you know. The relationships between men and women, he knew, are different now from when he was writing this in the U.S. than they were in Japan in the early 80s. So Hikaru was not exactly sexist toward Misa, but he's kind of a dick. same thing. He rescues Minmay. He becomes this big famous pilot, and he actually starts kind of, you know, seeing Minmay behind Misa's back.
Yeah, he's not clueless here. He's like genuinely cheating on Misa,
and maybe that was a U.S. stereotype.
See, and that makes me wonder, like, if Kalamari kind of knew how Hollywood films worked,
yeah.
You know, because
you don't.
Most of the characters in Hollywood, they're not these like happy-go-lucky. I have no clue what's going on.
Yeah,
right. The guys are usually, you know,
it should be.
But the guy that you're supposed to like usually also isn't cheating on his girlfriend,
right?
True,
you know,
right.
That's just not something.
Well, I mean, you watch any Howard Hughes movie. John Hughes movies. They're like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Ferris Bueller never cheated on Sloan.
The good movies that he directed.
Okay.
That was
ouch.
A good movie.
No, that was a good movie.
Breakfast Club. No one cheated on anyone.
She's Pretty in Pink. Some Kind of Wonderful. The real gems of his movies.
The ones
that he didn't
direct, basically.
No.
Yes.
Some Kind of Wonderful, he wasn't cheating. He was just a clueless guy.
Well, this is what this is all about. This
well,
guy's
I think
a clueless
Hikaru
guy.
In this is a very different character. Because, yeah, first he's cheating on Misa, and there's also, like, by rescuing Minmay, he becomes kind of a celebrity pilot.
Yeah, and that was actually... He was feeling inferior because Max was the actual better pilot than he was. And it wasn't until, you know, he rescues Minmay and all of a sudden it's like, hey, you know, I'm getting more attention now and he loves it.
Yeah, so he actually, like, goes through a very different character arc because he becomes famous and he gets kind of a big head and he's seeing this famous pop star on the side. And that's kind of the bit that he has to overcome.
He seems more like the Iceman than
dangerous.
I think one of the things that Kawamori introduces into this story that he has yet to bring into Macross is that Maria, or Minmay, is a famous singer on board the Macross, but not because of her singing ability.
That's right.
Because
Of Autotune.
Yeah.
Or what would later be known as Autotune. Yeah.
She basically has a synthesizer that makes her sound like a good singer.
Yeah.
And he has not brought that kind of a story element into the Macross universe, which I think would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, we have a whole series of Delta to go. We'll see.
I was going to say, true. You know, I'm sure one of those pop idols in Delta has auto-tune.
I honestly don't know if he would ever bring that into any of the animated Macross, though.
Well, it's just something, because he was always saying he wants to do something different.
Yeah.
And he did, that was really different compared to Do You Remember Love?
Well, because here's my thought on it. The reason why I don't think he would, I mean, and he could, he very well could, is that most of these Macross series are based off of singing as not necessarily a weapon, but singing to kind of move the enemy. And I think if you have a singer that's kind of going under false pretenses, you know, basically they're, I don't know, I think it would kind of, I guess, for lack of a better word, their spiritual wouldn't be necessarily strong enough to have that effect. So they would kind of, if they were going to do that, I think they would be more of like a maybe a competing character to maybe the main character.
Well, the goal for Minmay or Maria in the in this treatment is to find her real voice,
right?
You know, which of course she does at the end.
Yeah,
but yeah, basic plot. It's pretty much the same as Do You Remember Love?
It's
attack, and you know they have to fight them off, and then they discover like Minmay and Hikaru and Misa get captured by the Zentradi, and they do the kiss, you know, which shocks the Zentradi. But the thing is, the Zentradi don't look like people. I said before we saw the early designs that we thought were Zentradi mecha, but they're not Zentradi mecha. They're actually Zentradi. They look like monsters. So they capture, like, when they get Hikaru, Misa, and Minmay back, they also capture Kumajin, who's the only Zentradi character in it. And then we get a bit where Minmay goes. Where does she go? She goes to the Amazon.
She goes to the Amazon, yeah. And she but she does sing without her auto-tune.
Right.
I keep saying that.
And Kumajin is captured, and he breaks out of confinement because, like, through, like, the fold communications or whatever, he hears Minmay's song.
Well, they thought he was dead.
Right.
At that point.
That's right.
They thought
they were analyzing his brain.
And those of you who have seen Frontier episode, what was it, 3? I think it was episode 3.
Yeah.
This scene is exactly what happens there, where Ranka sings Imo and the Vajra, whose head they had blown up, wakes up and breaks out of confinement.
It attempts to.
Right.
It attempts to.
That's right. It tries to, and then they destroy it.
Yeah, they hit that fire button.
Right. They destroy it. Okay. Here, it's like Kumajin actually gets out, and then from then on, Kumajin becomes kind of like Aikun. It's like there's even a scene later on where Minmay is with Kumajin. Hikaru comes up and tries to kill Kumajin, and Minmay is trying to protect him.
Which I thought in my initial reading was that's very King Kong like. It was very like King Kong, you know, very King Kong falls in love on the island with the blonde.
Yeah. That's one thing we kind of skipped is the first appearance of Kumajin is like in the Do You Remember Love scene where the Zentradi first board the STF-1 and they attack Minmay's concert. That's almost the same scene, but Kumajin captures Minmay, takes her back to the Zentradi fleet. And then Ace and Ellen. Hikaru and Misa go after her in a Valkyrie that has no armament, just like Do You Remember Love? But the way it's explained in the treatment, it is almost like kind of King Kong-ish, where Kumajin doesn't want to kill her, doesn't really understand what he sees, but takes him with her. Cocoons her and then takes her to space and then comes back after her.
Which is odd because neither the original Macross nor Frontier felt like King Kong at all.
Well,
not I didn't think.
No.
Let's
I mean, also,
talk for
I mean, like,
a second. Let's talk for a second how these Zentradi designs look nothing like humanoids.
Mm-hmm.
They look like giant, what, like tentacle creatures almost? Or giant, like, what, they look like giant jellyfish things.
Kind of, right? Yeah. They look,
They're indescribable, really.
Going really far back.
They look like Lovecraft creatures.
Yeah. I remember there was an alien on Pee-wee's Playhouse that looked a lot like these aliens, a big green eyeball, and yeah. You know what? Maybe, yes, they should put a picture up for when we do this podcast.
Right.
Yeah. But I can see the whole King Kong archetype being a lot more kind of terrifying if they played it off right, you know?
Well, these Entradi are pretty damn terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They are. I mean, it's like, because the Entradi that we knew beforehand, they were intelligent beings, and they were just driven by one thing. You know, they were, I mean, but they spoke, they stood upright, they looked human, and they were pretty good looking, according to one of the characters. These, they're just total. I mean, they do go into how their brains are similar to ours.
Yeah.
When they finally get down to analyzing their brains, they're like, okay, these, maybe they're not total monsters. And, you know, this initial treatment doesn't describe them as exactly as hideous as the designs that we saw in the Macross 7 special. All it really says is that they're giant creatures. It's very vague.
Yeah.
And that was.
But they can smile.
They can smile. Yeah, so I mean, and that might have also been dependent on budget and what they could have, you know, thought they could have pulled off.
Oh, well, we'll get to that. Yeah.
Where does that leave Max?
Well, that's the other thing, is there is no Meltrandi in this Macross universe.
Right.
The treatment does state that they're doing away with the male-female Zentradi storyline, and it's just about the Zentradi. So, as far as Max, he's introduced as a character and then brought up a little bit later as... he may be the ace pilot in the actual fleet, but because he wasn't the one that rescued the pop star, he's not that famous.
Yeah.
So, I guess, you know, I mean, this kind of like, should we get to the third act at this point where they're, I mean, the climactic battle is, it's a little bit different than You Remember Love. In the fact that, you know, it's pretty much,
This is where it becomes Macross 7.
Okay.
More or less.
I'll take your word on that one because I've never I've not seen Macross.
It's really good, Doug.
It is the eye of the needle. It's the eye of the needle that many Macross fans cannot get through.
It's the best one.
Yeah.
Next to two.
Because I was talking to Gwen about it the other night, and he was like, yeah, there's no final battle. There's no final battle. And it's like, yeah, there is a final battle, but the thing is, it's like they go out to fight the Zentradi, and like the Earth forces like get their asses handed back to them. That's the final battle. Like all the Valkyries get wiped out, and Hikaru makes it back. And I guess probably Max makes it back too. They don't really say. But
unless the genius falls.
Probably Roy does.
Probably Roy, yeah.
Roy has to die in every
single... He probably dies in the rescue mission.
Right.
Most likely.
Yeah, because he's listed among the characters, but he's not listed in the synopsis at all.
Right.
But anyway, the Earth forces are completely defeated. The Zentradi are going to attack the Earth. And then Minmay sings without the auto-tune. And, should I just quote from it here?
Yeah, the entire ship covers their ears because she's so horrible. And
all of a sudden... Wait, let's see.
Let's set this up first.
Okay.
Basically, I believe after Minmay and Kamjin kind of, you know, they're together, she realizes that her singing is helping him to calm him down, to, you know, and he starts warming up to them. And so I don't remember if he escapes or what happens, but she ends up, the Earth forces basically decide, you know, they're going to use nukes. They're going to basically try and wipe out the Zentradi in this final attack. And she tries to tell the captain and everybody that no, you know, we can actually work this out, you know, he responded to my singing, you know, we can do this, and they don't believe her. And so that's when they set up this battle at the end. And so
and that also that ties into actually this being one of the grittiest love triangles.
Yes.
Because you know, there's usually the characters don't like each other, but there's no real, you know, people aren't getting in fights over each other, physical fights. Where the way he's written these characters, the Misa is doing whatever she can to keep her boyfriend and screw that relationship up. And the only reason she goes in on the rescue is because she feels it's her duty. But she's also kind of the scientist that had the information that the Zentradi do have other emotions and can feel happiness and can, you know, can hear the music. But she destroyed the data because of her hate for the Minmay character, which would have helped that argument. And, you know,
none of these characters are likable. My God.
Well, that's Hollywood.
So basically, basically Misa just, you know, killed all of those Valkyrie pilots because she hated Minmay so much.
Okay, so
just like The Force Awakens.
So again, we get to the end. And again, this treatment, it's translated pretty literally from Japanese by someone who probably, like, I think it's pretty high level English, having worked as an English teacher. If any one of my students wrote something like this, I would think it was pretty great. Maria starts singing in the battle, the song which couldn't sing before at the concert. That means she's not using auto-tune. Slowly but gradually, the way she sings gets strong, and her song is transmitted through the Valkyrie system. Captain Sheridan and people on the bridge realize what Ace and Maria, again, that's Hikaru and Minmay, are doing in space, and at first think they are crazy. However, gradually the Zentradi begin to change. Maria continues to sing. Ellen, that's Misa, puts Maria's song on many different kinds of frequencies. Zentradi's five cents can receive the frequency transmitter because their brain has the capacity to receive frequencies automatically. All of a sudden, the Zentradi stopped fighting. Then there was a missile that was exactly launched coming towards the Super Valkyrie E. Ace and Maria's life is in danger. But one giant appears in front of the Super Valkyrie and shoots down the missile. The giant was Kamijin. And that, right there, that's also, as Adrian was saying before, that's Frontier. Like, where the Badra all formed the shield in front of the Macross Frontier. He was heavily injured but survived and went back to his ship. Maria continues to sing, and Ace and Ellen and everyone is moved by her song. The giants led by Kamijin protect the Super Valkyrie E, and Maria continues to sing. As Maria's echoes throughout the universe, each giant's face gradually becomes a kind face. I totally know what that would be in what that sentence was in Japanese. Everybody can't believe this miracle. Zentradi is not firing anymore. Instead, all giants start to sing with Maria in the universe. The end.
Which is what the Vajra do in Frontier. They sing.
Yeah. Right.
The, you know, Aimo is a song.
Is a Vajra song.
It's a Vajra love song.
Right.
Seven did it first. Actually, doesn't Gepernich sing at the end?
Yeah. Try again. Try again.
Yeah, and that's what makes them all stop, too.
Well, there's a Marduk version of Moishido Love, and that came out before all of them. So
yeah. Really, that's
what's Macross 2?
So, I guess, if I can throw my thoughts on this, when I first read this, and I it was kind of tough to read because I knew I was like one of the first few Americans to ever read this before I shared it with everybody else. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh my God, what the hell am I reading? You know, the changes in the origin, I'm like, this is terrible. You know, because fans hate it when you change the origin. I was like, this would just be, you know, nobody would like this. And then it clicked in me. I was like, I did think, you know, a lot of this was Macross 7. You know, I thought, there's the Trinity, there's the Vajra, there, you know, the ship, it's a colony ship. I thought, you know, okay, yeah, it did work. So this could have been likable. So I warmed up to a little bit more after that. But it was, I mean, I saw it, and I saw a kind of just, you know, kind of a basic movie. I didn't really see anything super epic. I didn't see anything, you know, I didn't see anything, you know, that like, hey, you know, it wasn't like Michael Bay, you know, Rape My Childhood type, you know, stuff, things. I was, you know, I mean, I saw what could have been a decent movie. It was a little tough to get by past the English at first, and but I think a well crafted script could have really been written off of this.
But the problem is one of the problems. Again, this is early '90s, and as I was saying before we started, there were a fair amount of movies based on anime. That were getting, like, animes were getting licensed for, like, optioned for movies. Some movies were actually made, some weren't, like this one. And, like, Serial Experiments Lane, the American live-action movie that one of my friends wrote the script for. What? But if you look at what movies did come out, that were based on anime in the mid-90s. I mean, you can look at Fist of the North Star. You can look at The Giver. You can look at Crying Freeman. All of these were very low-budget, direct-to-video films. Crying Freeman, I don't think, was even released in the U.S., Fist of the North Star, I think, was released on video in the U.S. and got a theatrical release, like a brief theatrical release in Europe. I mean, but all of these are very, very minor, low-budget films, and I don't think this would have been any different because the studio involved was, what, Galaxy Films?
Well, Galaxy was the production company. They were probably pitching it to studios.
Okay.
I mean, there were films of the caliber that they were imagining at this time. We talked about Independence Day. That, you know, that did kind of fit the bill of what they were looking for in this. I mean, that's, but then again, that was also probably, at the time, it was one of the most expensive movies ever made. So, is a treatment coming from Kawamori in Japan, and, you know, pitched through tiny production companies, is that going to make it to the top of the, you know, the Fox or the Warner Brothers or the Universal, like, list of movies to put all of their money into? And probably not. So, you know, with what they had at the time, resource wise, they probably couldn't have made the movie as well as they wanted to.
Now, going by this treatment and what Kawamori says, because he's talking about 3D, the advances in 3D animation for a film, this is dated 92. Terminator 2 was 91.
Yeah.
Lawnmower Man was 92.
Yeah, but did you see, remember Power Rangers the movie was 95. Yeah. Do you remember that mecha at the end of Power Rangers the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really, really bad. You know, yeah. I mean, it was actually novel at the time to see it. That was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But it was probably some of the worst mecha you could ever see now.
But it was 93 was
Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park, yeah.
But I mean, that's Spielberg, that's Industrial Light and Magic. That's all the bells and whistles Universal, you're ever gonna get. Yeah. Which this movie wouldn't have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other movie that came out after Jurassic Park that was a, you know, a kind of a alien spaceship thing outside of Independence Day that was actually a big deal in the 3D world that would have been similar to this was Starship Troopers.
Right.
Yeah.
And so...
And even that was... I mean, they cut the mecha out of Starship Troopers and just focused on the bugs.
Yeah.
And so to get Kawamori's vision... That was like 8 years too early.
Right.
Kind of, yeah. No, I totally agree. Yeah, this would have been tough to pull off. It at best, it would have looked like that Wing Commander movie that everybody's seen but nobody can actually remember. I tried to watch that movie like 3 times, and I can't tell you what the plot is, and I've played the games.
Is that with
with Freddie Prinze Jr.
Jr., yeah. And then Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
But yeah, it would have looked more like that, and it would have been, you know... Had we seen this in 1996 or even 1999, we would have walked out of the theater pretty disappointed, I think. Just and not based on the story, but just based on the production values that they could have been given.
I don't think we would have seen it in theater. I think it would have come out on direct-to-video.
No, yeah. I totally agree.
But, you know, then also I do want to bring up some point, and this is just my speculation here. So, you know, we did talk about the changes in the backstory, and you know, it's not mentioned in here, you know, the R word that I became a little bit famous for. But I do think that there's a chance that the changes were also made to avoid any similarity to the origins that we did see in Robotech.
I don't think so.
I do, you know, it's because at the time, I mean, Robotech wasn't really a viable property at this time. No, you know, nobody was really watching it. I mean, there were a couple comics, a couple RPGs, but it was still an owned property in the U.S. at the time by another company. I'm not going to get into the whole Macross legal debate because I don't know everything about that. And, you know, everybody likes to throw in their 2 cents on that. But the truth is Macross was getting into the States at this time for whatever reason. And I think that, you know, if he was going to get Macross the movie into the States at this time, I believe, it's just my personal theory, that he was avoiding having any similarities with the origins of Robotech, thus changing the origins of the Centrality, changing the names, changing the Valkyries he's very specific about, and changing, you know, the origins of the SDF-1 Macross.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was thinking about Robotech at this point. It wasn't really until Harmony Gold started using its muscle that,
yeah, the,
that
the it whole became legal issues. Process. Because this is way before the legal process, and there wasn't really. And even Kalamori, I think today still doesn't really know everything about that, because that was all Big West and
I know,
but Tatsunoko this, and
you know, because Studio New. I mean, who knows? They also were the ones behind this treatment as well.
Niue.
See, yeah. Studio Niue. They were the ones behind this treatment as well. So I mean, they
well, no, I mean, it just it always says they, Studio Niue,
yeah,
Studio Niue had not quite ceased to exist by 92, but it definitely wasn't. I mean, it was just like there for like Macross and Orgus licenses.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it did get busted up when Hikaru smashed into it.
Right. And that was in episode 1.
Yeah.
So there were things like, you know, where they, like, you know, Warner Brothers was having legal trouble with the origins of Superman for a little while, so they avoided telling that origin for a little while. They didn't want to show Krypton for a little while because the family was suing and all that stuff. So I think, like I said, we don't know, but I think it's a definite possibility that they did it just to avoid anything going
on. Yeah, I would side with Doug on that.
Really?
Just
okay.
Not because they were afraid of Harmony Gold. It's just to have gone this far, to have gone over to Hollywood, they would have checked certain things, and they would have known that Macross, the original show, was sold off anyways. So, and Kalamori probably wouldn't want to tell that story, so.
Yeah.
So that means we have to arm wrestle, though.
Yeah. Okay. Right. No, I was just thinking that it's just kind of Kalamori, since he never wants to do the same thing twice, you know, every Macross sequel is different, so I think if you give him the same story to tell, he's going to always do it in a completely different way.
No, that's a fair point, too.
But you did bring up the Valkyries, which I thought was kind of interesting, because to go back to what we briefly touched on at the beginning about the Robotech live-action movie and everyone saying, like Robotech fans seem to be like, well, it has to be exactly like the Robotech TV show. You know, don't change anything. It needs to be like 9 movies and, you know, whereas right here we get Valkyries. Need redesign, adding elements of stealth, such as the F-117, B-2, YF-22, YF-23.
That's
and
a Macross
fighting type Valkyries. We should design new robot weapon fighters. New designs for toy merchandising. So yeah, no, the VF-1 was not going to appear in this. It was going to be completely different.
Mm.
Which pretty much takes that one leg that Robotech fans always want to stand on is, you know, the F-14 Tomcat is so old, it's outdated, it's been retired. It's like Kalamori already knew that.
Yeah.
And that's why he was keeping up with the times with stealth fighters and stuff. And let's go to our jet fighter expert over in Northern California. What do you have to say?
Okay, well, this movie is supposed to take place in, what, 2050-something?
Around that time.
Okay, so he's not going to take inspiration from something that's already 25 years old to make his new transforming fighter. He's going to want to make something that's cutting edge, right? And I think the designs probably would have looked pretty similar to Plus.
Yeah.
You would have had something looking like the YF-21, perhaps.
Well, he had to have been working on Plus at this point.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know.
Banner 7.
I think there was a... maybe in one of Wynn's podcasts where he had the discussion with Kalmori, and how Kalmori was explaining that he likes to keep his ideas and he'll keep them for years and years, right. And then one day he'll just, you know, decide, oh, this is a good time to bring up that idea. And I think in reading through this treatment, you could see a lot of these ideas, they were already there, and they were probably there a long time before this.
Just like, which is it, the Advanced Valkyries, or like the where it's the names of the two sides from Escaflowne?
Right.
In it? You know, it's, yeah, he...
And so actually, I was thinking of that podcast where he was talking about that, and just reading through this, how
George Lucas also hangs on to all of his ideas, yeah. His names like that. I mean, so Kalmori is the George Lucas of anime.
There's Plus in here. There's Seven in here. There's a lot of Frontier in here. And yeah. Frontier, I mean, was 2008. So, I mean, we're looking at more than 20 years later.
And I always had heard that, like, they were... that he was coming up with the concept of Frontier while working on Macross Zero. But clearly it's much earlier. But yeah, there are people who I've seen on Twitter and in podcasts saying, like, yeah, in the late 90s, Kawamori went crazy in a bad way and got all environmental and it's all here. You know, like, way before Plus, way before any of the... not way before Plus, but the same time as Plus. It's all here. There's no... like, the final battle, the humans lose, and Minmay sings, and the Zentradi are converted without fighting. The Macross itself has, as you said, like... an Amazon River, a Great Barrier Reef. It's all very environmental.
Amazon's where the Sentinels... no, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
and even, like, I remember on another site, when Frontier ended, when the series ended, there were people who were angry because they were really big Cheryl fans and they wanted Cheryl to end up with Alto. And... like, they said, well, Cheryl should win because she's way more popular. And then somehow it turned out, like, they said, oh, well, Kalamori's selling out by having the love triangle not be wrapped up because they don't want to anger all of those Minmay, or all of those Ranka fans. So that it's kind of like, well, Cheryl is so much more popular, so she should win, but Ranka has so many fans that they can't piss them off. That always bugged me.
Yeah.
But he does point out here...
In this treatment,
I would like to describe that, and the story ends at this point, and audience won't know what will happen to the love triangle. This is left to the audience's guess.
I do worry about the line before that where he says, this is fantasy, but I believe this could happen in real life, because no... like, and that's really kind of worrying me because no, this could never happen in real life ever.
You can't win a war by singing a song.
No,
it's just stupid.
Yeah, you know, no. I mean, by 2050, this is never going to happen. And you know, if we could, that'd be cool. But you know, I mean, maybe and jump on one of those ships. But no.
Can we talk about if it would have done well here?
Well, you know, that was one of the talking points earlier. Thank you, Kyle. How do you think, you know, like, the whole legal issue aside, because I don't want to talk about that because I get sick of that, how do you guys think this would have affected the Macross franchise had this, you know, like Kyle said, done well here?
I don't think
it would have.
You don't think it would have done well?
I don't think it would have done well. I think it would have vanished without a trace except as kind of a curiosity. It would be like the Fist of the North Star movie. It would be like something that, like, hardcore fans would kind of seek out just to see how bad it is.
But I mean, let's say it had done well. Somehow it got to that top level funding that, and you know, that Independence Day had, and like, would that have been the end of Macross Animation? Would they have, you know, would Mr. Kalamari have just said, "I'm
Kalamari"?
I said Kalamari. Like I said, booty traps.
Party boot.
Would they have just continued making the movies and just said, "Animation's done. We have American Hollywood money right now. And they're coming out with these things called DVDs in a few years. It's going to make us a ton of cash.
I can give you the realistic answer what would have happened. Okay. The movie would have came out, and we would never get it on Blu-ray because of Harmony Gold.
Yeah.
We would have got a videotape and a DVD, and we'd never see a remastered version or any other release. And it would have played out exactly the way it's played out right now. And we'd still probably have Frontier would probably be a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
But we would have gotten plus 7-0, most likely. I think the only thing that would have changed is the movie would have been stuck as far as after being released.
Yeah.
I can see that in distribution limbo.
Yeah.
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 Which goes back to my point why I think there is a chance that the story origins were different. But that is, it's all speculation.
Yeah, but they're using the name Macross, which,
Was this before Harmony Gold?
Well, they came out with Macross before they came out with Robotech.
Yeah, but did they copyright the... Did they trademark
this
it?
This was before they went and put the trademark.
That's something that might have also changed.
Right.
Big West might have...
Trademarked.
Yeah, they might have trademarked Macross in the U.S.
Yeah. And honestly, like, with all the other name changes, you could have flipped out the name of Macross really easily in this.
Yeah.
And still had a story very similar to it.
But then if they'd done that, then people would be watching it and saying, like, wow, this is kind of like that...
kind of like that Robotech cartoon.
Yeah, kind of like that Do You Remember Love movie that our parents got, like, my little brother by accident.
Now, the Clash of the... It's like that movie I bought at KB Toy Store, is Clash of the Binoids.
Well, this movie was intended to be viewed by, you know, general audiences, correct?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Let's say this had a decent budget, it was released by a major studio, and it was in theaters. And it was widely distributed across the country. Let's go to another reality here. Where you are just some average guy who wants to go see a kick-ass movie against aliens. You're a general sci-fi... You're kind of a regular mainstream sci-fi fan, whatever. We see this movie called Macross come out. Special effects aside, like, say the special effects were decent. Say, you know, the music was decent, everything about it, but the story was, you know, good. Would general American audiences really appreciate the cinematic blue-ballsing of letting the aliens just be ending happy without, like, a big fight at the end?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because I think, you know, like they said, you know, in the original Do You Remember Love, Hikaru had to blow up Bedolla's ship, you know, it was... You had to have the trench run somewhere.
Yeah.
You had to have the Death Star blow-ups. Same thing in this one. Here is just like, hey, let's sing. All right, boom. All right, we're done.
Right. Now, I'm sure there would be a small faction.
Yeah, the remake was terrible.
I thought it was good.
Oh, really? No, it's...
It was all right.
It was all right. It wasn't like, you know...
And it's... But no, it's nobody's talking about it.
We could appreciate it. We appreciate it because it's a... You know, it's a... Class, or it's a spin on a classic story. And that's what a lot of Macross fans would have appreciated about it. But as a general movie-going audience, I can't imagine too many people would have liked it.
Yeah, and I don't know if there are not enough Macross fans or Robotech fans combined to, you know, to have made this a success.
I think it would depend on how good the battle where all the Valkyries lose.
That,
I think it would depend on how good that scene was.
Nobody wants to see everybody lose in, like, the next to final battle, though.
Well, but if it's really, like, if it's really awesome destruction, I think you would go for that.
I could be wrong, but there's no real trench run in Avatar. And that's aliens and humans going at it.
There's a big battle, there's the hand-to-hand fight at the end with a guy that's the kind of like, you know, that's the
there's
version.
No Death Star blowing up there's
yeah
no,
but I'm you know it's just, that, you know, it's that's a planetary end, battle you know? That's
and
like
it, but at the end it's like people being accepted in their cultures and it's not them getting a medallion from blowing the Death Star,
but it comes up. I think that's because I think the catharsis there is that personal hand-to-hand battle that they have with the stereotype evil general military guy.
The you point know, is...
I saw Robot Jocks in the theater. While I think this would have been better, if this actually made it to a theater, I think the general audience probably would have kind of panned it in that
and
sort
it
of sense.
It would have come out like on a February, like after the Oscars, that nobody actually cared about.
Bringing in the Avatar thing, if they'd added like a character like an evil general on the Macross, like an evil human general who wanted to destroy all the Zentradi and Ace and Maria, Hikaru and Mimir, they're like, no, if we sing to them, it'll work. And then, like, Hikaru ends up killing that general.
Well, that would have probably worked, because it would have been good and evil.
These types of things.
Well, read the character description for the Captain Global guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's like a war, like, he enjoys war or something like that.
And then the mayor's the pacifist. So, we kind of glossed over that, too, but there is, like, the captain wants to fire these nukes, but the mayor is this pacifist. Who's like, you know, and because they have to get approval from UN Spacey, but Captain Sheridan, male, 50 years old, he commands the Macross as well as being one of the UN Spacey leaders regarding the immigration plan. Sorry, it was a little bit of English. Excellent fighter and strategist who likes combat. So he likes combat. He likes to fight. And then the next explanation, the next character is Mayor Rogers, male, 40s. Mayor of Macross City, very calm, naturalist, and pacifist. So, gotta remind me here because I'm a little rusty. But that the whole pacifist and warmongering that plotline did not make it into Do You Remember What, did it?
Not really.
Yeah, but I mean, it was in the SDF Macross series. So that was something that they did want to bring back into this that was not in the movie. But it's like. But, like, I think what you guys were, what Gwen was saying, what you guys, we were talking about earlier, there was no real big battle at the end. There was no, like, Avatar did have that personal battle at the end, and then, all the humans just have to leave the planet now. And then, there was that star, blowing up in Star Wars. But this one is just kind of like all the Zentradi just kind of got turned off. I mean, and when I say turned off, meaning, you hit their off switch.
I think that's one of the things that they would just in revisions they would have had to have changed. It wouldn't work.
And I'm sure David Newman did inject something like that if he had the chance to, because maybe he had Superman fly around the planet in reverse time for all the Macross to go back to Earth.
So Kyle, if this would have came out for us, we would have been thinking, this is a live action Macross, or for some of us, it'd be like, oh, this is just like Robotech, but they're calling it Macross. By the time this would have came out, by the time you have seen it, you wouldn't have had anything to look back on to compare it to. Going by this treatment, would this movie interest you?
Dude, I would have been 3 when this movie came out. I guess, I liked Independence Day as a kid. So, me right now, if it came out, right now, and I didn't see any Macross, I'd say it'd be pretty interesting to watch. It probably wouldn't be the best movie ever, but then again, this is, the first draft of a treatment. So, I wouldn't say it's really fair to judge it on just the first draft of the treatment. But I don't think I would dislike it.
I think for me, the most interesting thing would probably be the environment on board the Macross.
Yeah.
We've seen, all these cities on Macross ships, but, having, an Amazon River and a Great Barrier Reef, that would be, if it were done with, really good effects, that would be really cool to see.
Mm. Well, back then it would have been all miniatures.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't really have CGI cities until Star Wars. And,
A lot of this, I think the success of the visuals and everything would have just purely depended on how the cinematography played out and what we were seeing on the screen.
Well, for me, reading the beginning, it mostly was Do You Remember Love, watered down, a couple scenes taken out. But I really liked the subtle hints of what was going on in the love triangle. I thought that was the most interesting thing for the treatment.
Okay.
The Zentradi stuff was cool, but it was just, I kept flashing back to Vajra. Just right. Vajra this, yeah. Vajra that. Battle 7, Frontier Fleet, this episode, that episode. But the only thing that, for me, was new was the Minmay. What do you,
What's Maria, Ellen, and Ace.
Yeah.
The Mimei Auto-Tune? Or?
Mimei Auto-Tune right. And the Gritty Love Triangle, because Miso is really trying to screw over the other girl.
And yeah. She ended up screwing over half her fleet.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone pretty much died because of Miso. Yeah, because they lost all the capital ships mostly in the battle. So, yeah. And that was also something like in 7, had all the capital ships going with the Battle 7 and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
That's what I took away from it. I thought it's pretty interesting. I don't think it would have made a good movie being made at that time. Mm-hmm. But I see that he's been able to make it into something.
I think it would make a really cool comic, actually.
No, I think, there's something that could... I would like to see this get done somewhere, somehow.
Let's make a fan film, guys. It has to happen.
Right. Can I read this?
No, sorry. I know it was just passed among us, so if you hear us laughing without you
reading. Yeah, okay. Oh, God. Cheryl just handed us a note that she had written saying, who would have been cast in 1992? Keanu Reeves? Charlie Sheen?
No, what was the because I just
recently... Pamela Anderson is Ellen.
First off, we all know 1992.
Keanu Reeves was with the FBI.
He was in Point Break.
He crossed the line and people got hurt.
No. Charlie Sheen did Hot Shot.
Charlie Sheen was in Hot Shot.
The dates. Who was hot at that time?
92? That was like, I was. No.
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts. Well, yeah, there was also the rumor. One other thing to notice: so Harry Knowles of Ain't It Cool News fame posted right. in one of the Robotech groups.
This
or something.
Sounds like total bullshit.
No, it sounds like total bullshit. But he said, like, because somebody had said, "Hey, what's going on with this? Robotech movie, this Macross movie?" And Harry Knowles responded in the news groups in 1998. Before his website went big, he goes, "Oh yeah, it's been floating around, And the rumor is, I think it was Mickey Rourke as Rick Hunter, and Marissa Tomei as Lisa or Misa. I'm sorry. What was her name? I forgot her name. I'd have to look her up. But an actress of Asian descent, to be Minmay, who I can't remember right now, but." It was like all this out of left field like BS. Like, I mean,
Rick, Chen?
Huh?
Joan Chen.
No, Joan Chen.
No, Ace would have been Edward Furlong. He would have been hot off of T2.
That's right.
Yeah, but no, the character is supposed to be 22 to 26 years old.
Okay. Emilio Estevez.
Yeah. No, he was doing Young Guns, or yeah.
Young Guns.
You know who I would have been happy seeing as Maria would be Phoebe Cates.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, you're an old schooler.
That would have been...
Yeah, she never did much after Gremlins, too.
Yeah, still.
Holly Hunter. Holly Hunter is
Ellen. Holly Hunter?
Yeah, Holly Hunter is Ellen.
What about Demi Moore?
Demi Moore? Oh,
Demi Moore.
Dame. It's Dame.
Yeah.
Man, this is turning into a Robotech podcast.
This is like... Hey guys, who do you think should be in a live-action Robotech movie with real flesh and bones?
Well, but the nice thing about this is that always with those, they take people who were the right age 20 years ago.
Yeah, like Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer is Roy Fokker. It's like
Matthew McConaughey is Roy Fokker.
That would have worked 20 years ago.
Guy at the time was like, when they were talking about that, he was like, what? Popping up at like almost 300 pounds. And
But the thing that's nice about this is we're actually talking about 1992. We're not talking about who we'd cast now.
Yeah,
so
right.
We could say, hey, Val Kilmer.
He would have had too much of a following of Top Gun. I don't think they would have cast him as a...
No, I doubt he would have taken
him. Yeah,
he'd be the best Minmay right now is Kristen Crook, or whatever you say her name is.
Yeah.
From Smallville and Beauty and the Beast TV show. But she is the worst actress of all time. She's so good looking, but she is like such, like her acting is so repulsive. They would, they'd just have her stand there.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Dude, no, I'm telling you right now. Okay, so Ace would be Shia LaBeouf. And
if you were doing it,
Ellen
now.
Would be yes, and then Ellen would be Megan Fox, right?
And somebody already
we
did
were
that.
Seen this movie.
And Peter Cullen would have been Britai or Commagen.
Yeah.
Aquazama would be the captain.
All right, so should we wrap this up?
Yeah, well, this is where it goes.
We're just treading water.
What's your thoughts, Jason, on the treatment? Just in general.
In general, in reality, I think it would have just been direct to video. And I think overall, it might have got a few extra fans to look at Do You Remember Love and SDF Macross Plus. But I don't really think it would have made a big impact. I think it would just be something that we're all, you know, if it was made back then, we would just kind of all be talking about it in passing. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that. I've seen that. But that's about it. It wouldn't have been anything spectacular.
I thought it was, you know, it was all right. Again, I think of it more, I think it's more interesting to see, how Calamari does like kind of the thought process. I mean, I thought it was interesting. It's like as if someone said, "Okay, do Macross a third time and see what comes out." And you know, it's different again. And I thought the differences were interesting, but. I couldn't see this as like as a Hollywood movie. I couldn't see this as a standalone movie. I think it's interesting as like on a concept level, but I would never really want to see it.
Yeah. If I could add to that, I actually find this more interesting reading it than I probably would have actually seen
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Because I like the thought process. I like seeing all these come to fruition in the later anime series.
Yeah.
And I find that more interesting than probably what would have happened if I actually saw the movie itself.
How about you, Kyle?
Well, if I were to watch this movie, like Jason said, I feel like I would be kind of let down, and I would feel more interested in just reading about it like I did now, and it's more interesting in concept, and I don't think it would have been executed very well, especially if they didn't have a big budget for it. Maybe if it was made as like a little OVA special kind of thing, it might work. Might. But as a live action movie made in Hollywood, no.
And our very special guest, Doug, what are your feelings on?
You know, kind of pretty much what you guys said. This was so early concept that it's tough to judge on its merits for a look. My basic excitement came from just having this. I'm kind of a historical nerd like this. So few people have actually seen this, and for us to be able to see it now is really cool.
This is really special. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, my pleasure. Just to have it as part of the history, and you know, knowing that it's out there now. I mean, with all due respect to Mr. Kawamori, you're welcome. All due respect to him, because he wrote this like 25 years ago, and almost 25 years ago, and we understand that it's not 100% fleshed out. It's not. You know, and it's not something that was meant to be seen by the general public, but we've also seen a lot of these concepts become very successful in his other stories. So I'm just more excited for the fact that I got to see it more than anything else.
Yeah.
Adrian? Well, I already said my piece, but we'll leave it up to the listeners to go out and read it for themselves. It will probably get out at some point. Also, but it'll get out at some point. We didn't get the originals. We were able to get copies made of that. So we don't actually know who bought the eBay auction, or was it? No, it was a buy now. It wasn't even an auction.
Somebody out there. And one of the reasons we did this, because we did talk about, we're like, do we talk about this now? Because, you know, or do we wait about it? And we decided to talk about it now. A lot of us agreed to, because we know that it's out there somewhere already. It's some, you know.
Someone bought it within 45 minutes.
Somebody bought it within 45 minutes. We have no idea who that is.
And they may not have been going for this. They may have been going for the Macross 2.
Oh, totally. And they may not even care. They might never release it. They might never put anything out about it. But knowing it was a possibility, we all kind of wanted to get together and give our thoughts on it and give it the kind of context that we think it deserves.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because Benson put up the link, I contacted the guy that was selling it because I bought from him before, and I was asking him, can we arrange to get scans before you send it out? He accommodated to that. And my only fear is I didn't want anyone from getting it. I sure as hell didn't want to get it because he's always on eBay. And,
No.
And, I mean, there's a list of people I can name off that would get it and do evil with it.
Right.
And just, hold it over people's heads or whatnot. Or just to say, well, I know the answer and I'm not going to show you. We're going to get it out there, whether it's me or Jason or anyone at this table or, it could be Kyle over there.
Yeah. And I just want you guys to all appreciate the fact that I had to wait for like 15 minutes in the CVS parking lot for this guy to pull up and like actually drop it off of me. Because, he's like, hey, I'm in your town. Can I just drop it off? I'm like, you're not coming to my house. We're meeting in the parking lot. So, I waited, 15 minutes at the CVS parking lot. And there he was holding the thing. It was like deep throat all over again.
Oh, you've waited longer for people.
That's true.
Inside the team, yeah. Doug.
But I wish I could have gotten the originals. That's something I would have given anybody the movie treatment. I just wanted the Macross 2 materials.
You'll be getting those. I'll make sure to scan the rest of those.
Yeah, I got
to
get those. And one of these days, I swear, we're all going to do a podcast where we do a live reading of Contact, episode 1 of the OVA of Macross 2.
Like Lakers Theater?
Yes. Okay. We'll do it Kabuki style, so it's all men cast.
Right.
I'm game.
So, but we'll be ending the podcast shortly. Unfortunately, today is Wonderfest in Japan, and I'm here with these guys. And
unfortunately for us, you're here too. We don't want you here.
And I'm missing out on seeing the VF2SS, the next version, and I'm just missing out on everything.
And the female Batroid version?
Female Batroid version, which with SAP.
Which is apparently on the Macross Mecha Manual, it says it was never animated, even though it is.
Yeah, it's I didn't get that.
Yeah, it's in episodes 3 and 4.
But, anyways, I digress. Gwen's there covering it, and I'm sure he'll be doing a speaker podcast episode without me and telling me all about the things I'm missing. But hey, I get a copy of the treatment and the Macross 2 script, so I win. And with that, until next time, folding out.
Sweet. Congrats. Thank you.